I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, progressives are spinning an impossible-to-believe tale about alleged fraudulent citizen sign-ins. We'll discuss. Plus, I got a chance to go down to Olympia this morning to talk to state lawmakers about our ballooning budget. And another Washington town is being forced to fight against the placement of sexually violent predators in their community. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback and for joining us if you're live at this weird time of day. Delayed the live show a little bit today because I was down in Olympia. There was a big hearing on the income tax and then an opportunity to question Democratic lawmakers on that and some other things. So I'll play some of that coming up, but I do want to focus on the income tax debate because this is really in the final stages. It was in the House Committee, Finance Committee today. It was like an 8 a.m. hearing, which is crazy. I'm tired because it's just, I had to get up real early to go down to this thing. I'm going to play a lot of what Jamie Peterson, the Democratic senator who's leading the charge on this thing, had to say. But of all the testimony I heard today, this one's going to make me sound mean. But there was, of course, a ton of public testimony, a bunch of people signed in, pro and con. This one, in terms of a mentality, right, in a state like Washington, it stuck out to me more than anything else. And it's going to sound mean, but it is this woman who says she came to Washington State a few years ago to flee the war in Ukraine.
My name is Yulia Goncharova. I'm from Ukraine. My family and I arrived in the United States in 2022. I'm here to support SB 6346 because we need new revenue to stop devastating us to care. I work as a caregiver for my mom. She's one of nearly 3,000 immigrants who will lose their access to long-term care this October simply because they are immigrants. When the war started in Ukraine, my family and I witnessed very bad things happen. We prayed and God blessed us. Finally, we landed in Spokane. Unfortunately, my mom's health began to fail and I became her caregiver. I received just 30 hours a month to help her. It's very difficult to build your life from zero, especially when you are almost 70 years old like my mom. Her house is destroyed and she doesn't have any chance to build her life anywhere else.
Does that make me a horrible person that pisses me off? Have I turned just cold as ice? Look, I feel bad for anyone that has to flee war or deals with a situation like we could never imagine in the United States. I'm not like a no immigrant kind of person. I'm for legal immigration. In this case, she says her and her mom were refugees from the war in Ukraine. I have a lot of sympathy. But you came because of that to the greatest country on earth. You've been here for 3 years and you're now telling us that we need an income tax in our state to help you and to help your mom live a better life. That bothers me so much. Like, how much are you contributing to the system since coming here as a refugee from Ukraine? My guess is zero. My guess is that you're, you know, a caregiver for your mom, 30 hours a month that's being paid for by the government, and you're out of a war zone, and you're alive. And the United States is responsible for that. And Washington State and the people of Washington State have welcomed you with open arms. And just a couple years later, you're whining that it's not enough. I'm sorry, that just bothers me. I want to take care of people, but this demand that, like, it's if you give a mouse a cookie, gosh, people are going to just rake me over the coals for this because I sound so cold. But it's like, dude, we just saved you from a war zone and you come to our state in a matter of years and demand that millionaires pay an additional 10% of their income so you can take care of your mom, who we also rescued from a war zone? Stop. Okay, I had to start with that because that was just, it got me going this morning. And I was the whole way back from Olympia, I'm like, should I play that clip on my show and talk about how much it angers me, or does that make me sound like a lunatic? If it makes me sound like a lunatic, that's fine. But I'm guessing a lot of you are on the same page as me. So Senator Jamie Peterson, since he is the lead sponsor on the income tax, which they're calling the millionaire's tax, but it's just an income tax, and it'll be an income tax on everyone in a matter of years. So it's part of the process for the sponsor to show up in the opposing House committee and to talk about his bill.
I want a future in which there are well-funded public schools, in which there are is a well-funded university system coming after them. I want them to live in a world where there are not homeless people trying to find shelter on the street.
Hold on a second. Can you play that again, Nicole? One more time for me.
I want a future in which there are well-funded public schools, in which there are is a well-funded university system coming after them. I want them to live in a world where there are not homeless people trying to find shelter on the street.
Jeez, who is responsible for the fact that in Washington State, his kids might have to grow up in a world where there's homeless people trying to find shelter on the street? I would say the party that's had near complete control of government for 40 years in Washington State. It's like he's oblivious to that. He's the highest ranking Democrat in the state Senate, responsible for so many of these policies. His party has had a trifecta in Olympia, meaning they control the House, Senate, and the governor's office for most of the last 26 years. And they've controlled the governor's office for the last 40 years. And he's talking about how if they don't pass this income tax, it's just going to be a horrible state for his kids to live in. Okay. Well, that seems like a you problem. I feel like your kids should be mad at you for that. But part of what he lists off there about kind of the future desires and why we must make the rich pay their fair share, it bothers me to the core, because the overarching argument against this, even if you're okay with rich people paying more in taxes and that's something that appeals to you, the overarching argument against it to me is we don't need the money. We have a ballooning state budget. Our budget and our revenue has increased dramatically over time, far outpacing inflation, far outpacing population growth. The issue is one of priorities. And so you'll hear this theme a lot today as we discuss some of the debates around the income tax, the arguments for it and why we need it. They make it about necessities. If we don't do this income tax, we can't pay for necessities. We can't pay for education. People will be homeless on the streets. We can't pay for healthcare. People will die. I swear to God, there was a lady who gave testimony saying like people will lose their limbs or something. It was very strange. But the truth is we have more money than ever before. We absolutely do not have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem. And after this committee hearing on the income tax, Democratic leaders from the House and Senate had a media availability. And I got an opportunity to ask Senator Jamie Peterson about the reality that we have a bigger budget than we've ever had. How come we can't pay for the necessities?
Over the last 10 years, the state budget roughly has ballooned at 3 times the rate of inflation and 9 times the rate of population growth. During that period of time, spending per pupil has doubled. And during that period of time, you guys have passed a multi-billion-dollar tax on capital gains, a multi-billion-dollar carbon tax, and last year, the largest tax increase in state history. So can you explain to people why, given all of that, we still need more money?
Well, I guess one thing that I would start by saying is inflation and population growth are not separate. Those you need to be looking at together. In addition, one of the ways to lie with statistics about the budget is not to pay attention to the fact that when we resolved the McCleary litigation, we moved a huge amount of property tax authority from local budgets into the state budget. So there was a fairly dramatic leap in state spending that did not represent a leap in government spending. It just meant that because the Supreme Court had told us that it had to be reliable, regular revenue, we moved it from being property tax revenue that was subject to voters voting at the local level into being property tax revenue that was part of the state school levy. You know, we are working, I think, all the time, and Representative Fitzgibbon could talk about the House's work on this, on trying to be more efficient in the budget, trying to figure out what we have been doing that we don't need to do anymore. But the basic fact remains that we get the bills essentially from 295 school districts about how much it costs to educate the 1.1 million kids who are in public school. That is our core duty.
Okay. So a couple things there. Let me just dissect both of the arguments he makes. I'm laying this out for him. These are just truths. Our budget has ballooned. three times the rate of inflation, nine times the rate of population growth. When it comes to students, on average per year, our schools, compared to just a decade ago, are spending two times more per pupil. All of that, you passed billions of dollars in new taxes in the last 6 years alone. All of that, and you're still down there claiming poverty. And he's saying, well, we're always open to options and ways where we can, you know, trim the fat. And it's like, no, you're not. We just did a story on the show yesterday about how the state is giving $4.3 million to a single doctor in Spokane to perform mostly vaginoplasties, that's sex change procedures, on transgender prison inmates. So no, you're not looking for ways to save money. You're finding new things to spend money on. And that's the problem. And to his point about education, so it gets a little nerdy, but this is very, very important, because this is going to be the number one argument, because after this income tax passes, somebody's going to run an initiative on it and it'll go to voters. And what they'll do is the Washington Education Association, the teachers union, will spend millions of dollars on the airwaves telling you that we must tax the rich to pay for education. We must tax the rich to fully fund education, because who doesn't love kids? It's for the kids. It's for the children. So it's really important that everyone understands the little shell game he tried to play there in his answer to me. So he's saying, back like a decade ago, there was a state Supreme Court ruling. It's called McCleary. If you ever hear McCleary, that's what they're referring to. And it basically said that, you know, instead of all these local funding levies that have a disproportionate funding for certain school districts based on whether they're in a rich area or a poor area, the state has to fully fund education. And so what he's saying is, when that responsibility came back to us, well, all of a sudden we had to spend all this money on education. And so it made it look like our budget had grown exponentially, but it was really just in the education front. That's just not true. There's some elements of truth in there. But even accounting for the McCleary decision, our budget has ballooned. And it's not like it went from, let me just give you a number. It's not like it went from before McCleary, 30% of our budget was spent on education and 70% was spent on other stuff. And it's not like it went to 90% on education and we had to cut all these other areas. No, they grew everything. They increased the amount of money we spent on education, and the rest of the budget ballooned as well. So this is the follow-up question I had for him.
I mean, that's just kind of the fact of what the costs are. There's not a lot that we can do about that, and that's close to half of our budget just in the K-12 system.
Please correct me if I'm misunderstanding the education issue, because it was a lot of the testimony today in favor of the income tax was from teachers who say, you know, we don't have what we need basically in the class. So the numbers that I've seen show that per pupil in the state, on average, we've doubled the amount we're spending per pupil. And then we had the McCleary decision, and also as a percentage of the overall budget, education has actually shrunk. So the budget has grown, education has grown as well. So I guess that's the question I get from people a lot is, how can we say we don't have enough money for school when we're spending twice as much per pupil?
You know, I find it helpful when we talk about the sort of the growth in state spending to, like, be less abstract and talk about, like, what are some of those areas where we've seen the big growth. So, for example, since the passage of the Fair Start for Kids Act in 2021, we've increased state spending on early learning and childcare by about 10 times. That is a very big increase. And that's also means that many tens of thousands of Washington families have access to childcare who didn't before. Since we passed the Workforce Education Investment Act in 2019, we have seen many tens of thousands of Washington young people access the Washington College Grant for financial aid to our higher education institutions. In 2023, we allowed adults on Medicaid to access dental care, non-emergency dental care. That was a significant investment in the 2023 budget.
Now that is closer to an honest answer, as opposed to saying, oh, well, you know, it's a state Supreme Court thing and now we need a bunch of money, which is just total nonsense. What he just said there, that's Representative Joe Fitzgibbon, who's the leading Democrat over in the House. What he just said is an honest answer. We spent more money on stuff. That's basically, he's trying to spin it as, well, look at all these great areas of investment. We invested in early learning and childcare, workforce education. We gave adults free dental care. But that is just a very artful way of saying we decided to spend more money on stuff. And that's exactly the point I'm making, is if you can fund all of that, millions of dollars to childcare, millions of dollars to workforce education that you weren't giving previously, millions of dollars to help low-income adults afford dental care, But now you're claiming poverty and saying you can't afford basic stuff. Like, you can't afford to keep people off the streets. We can't afford to get food in the mouth of the hungry. We can't afford to keep schools open or whatever it is. No, he just told on himself there, trying to explain why the budget has ballooned. And he lists all these things that we started to spend more money on, which is my point. So he's just agreeing with me, and he's just trying to put in a nice little package and lipstick on a pig. No, you just keep finding stuff that you believe you should be able to spend other people's money on. And that's it. I just disagree. It's as simple as that. I just disagree. So I would love it if Democrats would just be honest like that and say, look, Brandy, we started spending money on a lot more stuff. $4.3 million to a doctor to provide, you know, gender surgeries to prison inmates. We wanted to spend money on that, so we're spending money on that. Dental care for the elderly and for low-income adults, helping with work. And I would say, okay, like, I disagree. I don't think that should be a core function of government. I don't think you should tax people into poverty to pay for that stuff, but at least you're being honest about it. So I said a lot of the testimony in favor of the income tax today came from teachers. Here's one of them.
My name is Thelma Fontanella, and I'm a middle school teacher in the Clover Park School District. I teach in a K-12 alternative setting where many students carry heavy burdens long before they walk through our doors. I'm testifying pro on SB 6346 because our schools don't have enough resources.
Did you catch that? First of all, I when she came on, I took note of the time. It was like 9:15 in the morning, okay? So I was sort of like, 9:15 in the morning, teacher, can you play that again?
My name is Thelma Fontanella, and I'm a middle school teacher in the Clover Park School District.
Is she at work?
I teach in a K-12 alternative setting where many students carry heavy burdens long before they walk through our doors. I'm testifying pro on SB 6346 because our schools don't have enough resources.
Yeah, so that's a prime example of why your school needs less resources. On school hours, I have to imagine it's Tuesday at 9:15 in the morning. If you're a teacher, you're at work, right? Trans pride flag behind her. So we're paying this teacher to testify about in favor of taxing us more with her trans pride flag in the background. But also, she's being very dishonest. Our friend Todd Myers with Washington Policy Center, he was sort of fact checking some of these people as they spoke. And he put this out. A teacher from Clover Park School District testified for the income tax, saying the school district is facing cuts. According to OSPI, the school district has increased spending by 33% above inflation since 2017, going from $17,000 per pupil to $23,000 per pupil. So in real time, it's like, okay, no, you do not have a revenue problem. You have a spending problem. So why are you saying that your school can't afford basic stuff and it's hurting education when your school district specifically since 2017 has increased spending 33% above inflation? And there were multiple other examples of teachers who came in, said the same thing. We can't afford basic supplies. Students are struggling. And then it turned out when you looked at the numbers that the amount of money that they're getting per pupil has grown exponentially way above inflation at a time, by the way, when for a lot of these school districts, enrollment is either stagnant or declining. So no, this is, you know, what they did is they took all that money and they padded their own pockets. The WEA got all this money, they padded their pockets, they raised teacher pay, they started hiring assistant superintendent after assistant superintendent after assistant superintendent and growing all the bureaucracy of education for the money. And they just said, screw it with the kids. We don't care about the kids. And then they use the kids as a political pawn every time the unions want more money. Because as government gets bigger, they pad the pockets of the unions, the people who put them in office. So it's just outrageous. Now, here is the really outrageous thing. Have you guys been following this bot/fraud debate? So remember, we started the show yesterday by celebrating the fact that more than 100,000 Washingtonians had partook in the process for this bill, pro and con. But more than 100,000 people had registered against the income tax. And there was like, what, 15, somewhere from 10 to 20,000. I'd have to look at the latest number. Not as much. I think closer to 10,000 who registered in favor of it. And I was like, that's awesome. That is awesome to see that level of civic engagement. And then over the last 24 hours, all these headlines started to come out once again about progressives saying that those high numbers against the income tax were driven by bots and fraud, so much so that April Berg, who's the chair of House Finance, started the committee hearing today by talking about it.
I do want to make a brief announcement to call attention to something that you may have seen in the press, We have had, it seems, manipulation of our public comment system. Following stakeholder reports of impersonation, initial review indicates that there are over 19,000 duplicate records and over 200 people have been fraudulently signed in on the bill without their knowledge. This matter is being investigated further, and I want to publicly acknowledge the damage that's been done to this democratic process, as this fraud has called into question many of the sign-ons onto this bill.
I'm about to lose it on this, but first, after she decided to, you know, I think really taint the whole meeting, and it slap in the face to everyone who actually took the time to be there, to register, to testify, for her to say over what you're about to hear is really a disputed issue, for her to say this has tainted the democratic process, it's just such a slap in the face. But then Ed Orcutt on the Republican side came in and said, okay, even if we eliminate these suspect sign-ins, there's still an awful lot of people who registered their opposition to this income tax.
We're concerned that, you know, some people have taken advantage of the system. We are going to work with the majority party and with our staff to try and make sure our system is secure as possible so that it is a valuable tool for the public as well as for the legislature. Having said that, I still think it's important to note that there's over 100,000 unique individuals who have signed in with concerns about this bill.
Yeah, and that's a record. So a little context before we get into how the left has used the legacy media to paint this impossible narrative about what transpired with all of this. So you'll recall when this income tax was in front of the Senate Ways and Means Committee, a record number of people signed in opposed to it. At the time, it was like 66,000. The state had never seen anything like it. This was a couple weeks ago. And what happened that day? Democrats were just throwing out accusations that, oh, it was probably bots. It was probably bots, and Fox 13 News aired a clip with this person who was just making a totally unfounded allegation. Oh, I think if people dive into it, they'll see it's just bots. Well, we followed up with Senator Jamie Peterson, the Democrat. We followed up with the organization that individual who made that claim on the news was with, and they backed away. They said, well, we don't really have any proof of that. And so, you know, they made an unfounded claim. There was no evidence that these 66 or so thousand people, that they had been bots. And so what I believe happened after that is they decided to manufacture the evidence that they needed to discredit a remarkable historic citizen uprising and civic engagement. So the committee sign-ins, and if you're not familiar with the process, for any bill in Olympia, you could go in and you can register pro-con. You don't have to, like, if you can't come down to testify, which who can at 8 a.m. on a Tuesday, besides all the union weirdos, you can just, like, takes 30 seconds. We always encourage you to do this pro-con. And that's your way as a citizen of telling your elected leaders how you feel about a bill. Now, there's no, I could go in there and I could type Mickey Mouse. I could go, I mean, I don't know why I would do that, but you don't have to show your ID. You just have to put your name. And again, you can make it up. They're not checking anything. And then you put the city and your zip code. And you put whether you're pro or con. And that's really it. And you don't have to show your ID or anything. So it's not some sort of secure system. And it really never has been. But we've never had these allegations that people are trying to game the system. Now, so for the last 4 days or so, me, Ari Hoffman, Jonathan Cho, Brian Haywood, a bunch of people with pretty significant social media followings were putting out the link online telling people, hey, register your position on this because we wanted to beat that 66,000 record. We wanted it to get above 100,000. As the days went by, last 4 days, it was increasing slow but steady increases in a way where, I mean, those posts reached millions of people. So the fact that we got around 100,000 people to sign in isn't really much of a surprise. Then Monday rolls around, and there is a progressive group that starts putting out this information, totally unverified, putting out information that they have some suspicions that there were fraudulent sign-ins. And they'd run the names and all this stuff and found that there was duplicate names. And so they put out a press release against, you know, really, again, there's not a lot of information with it, just a vague press release saying they're investigating it further. And the media just absolutely hops on it. The media is like on it. The Seattle Times aired this headline. Waugh Millionaires Tax Group alleges 37,000 fake opposition sign-ins. Okay. An advocacy group is accusing unknown actors of orchestrating widespread fraud in the legislature's official public comment system, alleging that tens of thousands of sign-ins opposing the millionaires tax proposal include mass duplicate entries and more than 100 confirmed impersonations, including a former member of Congress and a sitting state senator. Invest in Washington Now, a group that advocates progressive policies, including the proposed 9.9% tax on income over $1 million, said it confirmed over the weekend that more than 100 individuals were falsely signed in without their consent. Those allegedly impersonated include former U.S. Representative Derek Kilmer and State Senator Victoria Hunt, a Democrat from Issaquah and a co-sponsor of the measure, along with teachers, union leaders, advocates, and other elected officials. They go on to say, beyond those individual cases, organizers said they identified 37,000 additional opposition sign-ins generated through thousands of duplicate name submissions across House and Senate hearings combined. So in a nutshell, they're saying, and they put on this press release, that they've got like 100 people whose names were fraudulently signed in as being opposed to the income tax. And those were pretty easy to spot because it was like former Congressman Derek Kilmer, con. Well, he's probably in support of the income tax. It was State Senator Victoria Hunt, con. She co-sponsored the income tax proposal. It was members of SEIU. It was members of the Washington Education Association, con. And those members are like, well, I didn't sign in, con. So those ones are easy to tell. There's something wrong there. But then, and what's missing here is there was a bunch of duplicates, like people who were signed in twice. Now, I wouldn't call that necessarily nefarious. And what's interesting is all these news articles about this, they kind of leave out the fact that there was a lot of duplicates on both sides, pro and con. And this could be for a lot of reasons. People might think that this is like a sign in as many times as you can situation, you know, who've never participated in the process. They might think that they could sign in once a day and they just don't know. And so they just do it. So I think that we can forgive some of that, right? On the pro side and the con side, if there's duplicates, you know, let's not assume that they automatically knew they were doing something wrong. But it's interesting how the Times focuses on issues with the con sign-ins and not really issues with the pro sign-ins. But as soon as this progressive group put this out, again, based on kind of conjecture, and we don't really know who did this or how it happened, reporters became obsessed with this. I went to this Democrat media availability, and this was virtually all the other reporters in the room wanted to ask about.
I'm curious about the allegations of fraud on the con sign-ins.
Wanting to go back to the topic of the bots and the fake sign-ins.
There's a criminal element here. I mean, could there be a fraud?
Okay. And I was sitting there, I was like, oh my God. Because it all was about the cons. Like, oh, we're only interested in looking into fraud or bots if it's the people who signed in against the income tax. Now, here is my crazy theory, and I don't think that it can be denied. Progressives did this intentionally. I am so confident. Hear me out. If you were going to try to pad the numbers, right? Let's say you oppose the income tax and you're like, I'm going to go in there and pad the numbers. Okay, let's talk about how you do that in a way where you could get away with it. Because if you're trying to pad the numbers, you want it to seem realistic, right? Well, the easiest way for you to do that is just to like make up names. Make up names and make up a city. Or to use names of, you know, Republicans or people who you know would support or would oppose the proposal anyway. What you wouldn't do is use a bunch of names that would immediately throw up a red flag, right? If you were trying to pad the numbers to make it appear that there was more opposition to the income tax than there really was, I definitely wouldn't use the name of the state senator who co-sponsored the bill. I definitely wouldn't use the name of a former Democratic congressman. And I sure as hell wouldn't use the names of a bunch of Washington Education Association members who are out there fighting for the income tax every single day. So if I were trying to get away with padding numbers, I would do the exact opposite of what happened here. But more than that, let's say I was like, I just need to get as many names in there as possible. How would I know the names of random WEA members? I mean, yeah, you could have a couple people who go in there and say, oh, this is funny. I'm going to sign up that former Congressman Derek Kilmer is opposed to the income tax. I'm going to sign up that this state senator who endorsed it is opposed to the income tax, and just as a joke. But it's not funny if you go in there and type the names of WEA members who no one knows. Now, look at it this way. So after that happened, you have this political entity. This is a group called, and it's a group of Democratic strategists. It's called Powerhouse Strategies, and they support all the loony lefty stuff and the messaging on it. They hold an emergency press conference yesterday, okay, where they're coming out and saying, I didn't sign con. And they're going to expose all these fraudulent sign-ins, right? So take a look at their press conference, this Zoom. And this is just a couple of the people who were on it. And each of them have this identical graphic used as their background that says, I did not sign. I did not sign. And these are all supposedly people whose names were signed in against the income tax and who are saying, oh, I didn't do that. Now, I want you to really think critically here. How much time would it take to go through a list of 110,000 people who signed in, even with help from Excel and AI? How much time would it take to narrow down on 100 or so people that look suspicious because of the organization they're with and thinking, did they really sign in con? And how much time would it take to then call them or contact them somehow? And how do you even have their contact information to confirm with them that they didn't, in fact, sign in con? And then also get 100 of them or so to agree to be on a Zoom meeting at the last minute with matching backgrounds. Having organized a lot of things in the political realm, I can tell you that's impossible to do in 48 hours. Impossible. I'll tell you exactly what happened. Some progressive group, maybe one of these progressive strategy groups, they did the way that they could affect this the quickest. They wanted to say, oh my gosh, there's so much momentum against this income tax proposal that we so desperately want. There's millions of dollars for our union members at stake. And so they said, oh my gosh, let's take our lists and let's sign these lists in con. And then we'll point out, maybe send an email to someone, hey, doesn't this look suspicious? So they start looking into it. We already have all the contact information from these people because this information is from our lists. They're members of the SEIU and WEA. They're people who are supporting our effort to pass an income tax. So you can get them ready real quick. And the left is great at organizing. So they were already, and they had the graphic already made. That's the only thing that makes sense. You want me to believe that conservatives, who I don't think they'll be offended by this, are notoriously horrible organizers. No strategy whatsoever. In fact, at the committee hearing today, the entire room was packed with union members with matching scarves who got all the seats. So the conservatives, who can't even be bothered to show up early enough to get a seat in the hearing room, are strategic enough to have some massive fraud campaign when they're already getting a lot of natural momentum thanks to social media? What would be the point? And here's the other thing that just drives it home for me. And I know you guys are picking up what I'm putting down. Rules for radicals. Accuse your enemy of doing what you're doing while you do it. They're perpetrating the fraud and they're accusing because they're way more strategic. But then it was brought up at this press conference I went to that, hey, you know, is this something that's going to be investigated or could potentially be a crime? Listen to how the Democratic leadership responds to that question.
Well, I think...
I'll turn to the prosecutor.
Well, I mean, what's the purpose, right? It's not like we are making decisions not to pass a bill because of a sign-in. That fraud is not going to personally help anyone financially or in any other way. So, you know, we're not talking about, like, criminal activity here. It's people trying to give their opinion, and apparently bots are giving their opinions right now. So we'll take it with a grain of salt.
Why would they laugh at that question? Oh, because they just spent, oh yeah, this is serious. We're taking this, you know, seriously. And oh gosh, this ruins the democratic process. Well, are you going to investigate it? Well, let's not go that far. It's because they know where that investigation will lead. And so I say this right now. I am in full support of an investigation. Using the full force of the Attorney General's office and the Washington State Patrol, track and trace IP numbers. I want to know where every single one of those fraudulent sign-ins originated from. And I want the people who did it brought to justice, whatever crime you might be able to come up with. You have to click that little box that says, I'm not a robot, so maybe there's some crime associated with saying you're not a robot. I don't know. I am in full support of it because I know where it'll lead. It'll lead back to one of these progressive strategy groups. It's the only thing that makes sense. It's the only thing that makes sense. And what I will also say is this is a clear effort to dismiss people who don't want an income tax. In this state, the citizens have voted against an income tax 11 times. They don't want it. It's no surprise that more than 100,000 people would come out in opposition to it and register their opposition to it. And so even if, let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and say, yeah, let's get rid of all these ones that look suspicious or were duplicates, you still had around 100,000 people. That's a ton. And they don't want to acknowledge that. But here's the worst part of it all, I'll say. I don't even think it matters. We're having these debates about were they bots, were they not bots? And Democrats at this leadership hearing just came out and said, and they didn't even try to hide it, that they don't even care how many people register pro or con.
You shouldn't really pay attention to that kind of dialogue because of the risks of multiple sign-ins.
The main antidote to this is just to take with a grain of salt the numbers.
This system was not set up to be like a voting where people count sign-ins as votes.
I don't think everyone who's signing in support or opposition is actually reading the bill. So I think you gotta take it for what it's worth. And it's not like we are making decisions not to pass a bill because of a sign-in. So we'll take it with a grain of salt. They're not really helping us make decisions. We rely on people who actually come and testify.
We don't, in that process, pay attention to people who sign in but not to testify. You just have to take it for what it was worth.
How condescending is that? They don't care. Oh, if you didn't bother to come down to Olympia and testify at 8 a.m. on a Tuesday, we don't care about your opinion. That's not even hyperbole. That's literally what they just said. So you can go and investigate whether these were bots or duplicates or what happened there. They don't care. They don't give an S-H-I-T. They don't care. See, Nicole, I cannot swear when I want to. They don't care. They just told you. And so they want to make a big deal. This is offensive to our democracy, whatever April Berg said, when the leadership says, nah, we're not listening to those people anyway. Genuinely disgusting. But yeah, I'm not dumb. Come on now. And I know I've been red-pilled. But you really want me to believe that in 24 to 48 hours, you went through all of these 100,000 signatures, tracked it all down, looked at the suspicious ones. This is weird. Let's get in touch with all these people. Oh, you didn't really sign it? Okay, can you have a Zoom meeting? All of you be on a Zoom at this time. We're going to send you a background, put it behind you. It's going to be red. It's going to say, did not sign. Totally didn't plan this. We had nothing to do with it at all. Yeah, we're not dumb. We don't believe it. All right, coming up next, an emotional mayor of Kennewick, Washington, talks about his community's fight against a house that would house sexually violent predators. We'll discuss first, could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? I know it's something I've thought about. So if you're overwhelmed with all the noise around AI, crypto, tech, whatever, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital and just get his second opinion. It's a smart thing to do. You can find out whether your portfolio is well positioned for these financial times and uncertainties. It's called their Know Your Risk Portfolio Review. So they're focused on risk management, built around the fundamentals of value investing, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get a second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk Portfolio Review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast. So go search that on YouTube, all social media platforms, Know Your Risk Podcast, and go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. A couple years ago, we were helping citizens in Enumclaw and Tenino push back against the placement of sexually violent predators in their communities. So these are the people who end up on an island in Washington state, because after they are released from prison for their sex offenders or for their sex offenses, a doctor says that they are still at a high likelihood to reoffend. So we literally put them on an island, which I think is a pretty cool thing. The problem is, under the last two attorney generals of Washington state, they've started releasing those sexually violent predators at a very rapid pace. And they are ending up in what's called an LRA, these less restrictive alternatives, in communities across the state of Washington. And oftentimes, like was the case in Enumclaw and Tenino, these communities are completely blindsided by it. There was no input. There's no Q&A about their concerns and the safety of their kids. And so the city of Kennewick is now dealing with this. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter so you can find out how to get involved in pushing back against things like what we're about to discuss. So Kennewick Mayor Jason McShane was our guest on Sundays with Subscribers. This guy is so emotional about this issue. And there are very few politicians left that get that fired up when it comes to protecting the vulnerable. We'll have a clip from this interview coming up. But essentially, the city of Kennewick, very similar to what Tenino and Enumclaw went through. They find out with virtually no notice that there's this house, about five public schools in the area, in a 2-mile radius of this house that was purchased to be used as one of these LRAs. And so the community's like, oh, hell no. This house is going to be used for people coming off McNeil Island? And you basically just told the city, yeah, we bought it. We're going to be opening it up with no input, no community safety plan, no discussions about whether that house in that area with such a close proximity to where children will be is the best place to house sexually violent predators. And one of the things that really upsets me about the fact that Kennewick is going through this work right now is because after what happened in Tenino and Enumclaw, and you'll recall the Tenino parents fought so hard against the LRA, they got the place to shut down before it even opened up. But they were in Olympia, they were advocating for themselves, and Democrats and Republicans agreed, and the governor, that yeah, we really should be giving these communities a little more notice and working with these communities. And so there was this effort, we thought, to improve community notification and engagement after the whole fight that Tenino and Enumclaw went through. And then this happens in Kennewick, and we find out they didn't improve jack. They didn't improve anything. And so the Kennewick City Council passed a resolution. Let's be honest, they have no power here. The state can decide to put these LRAs virtually anywhere they want. They don't have to ask cities or get approval from cities or counties. But common sense would dictate that working with a city or county in a community where these are going to go is in the best interest of everyone. So Kennewick City Council, the mayor, they're so upset by this. They passed a resolution. It has no teeth at all, but it demands that future placements of that kind be governed by a process that includes the city and all these stakeholders. And they sent a letter to Governor Ferguson asking him to halt opening of this LRA immediately. But Mayor McShane, when he joined us on Sunday, he acknowledges that they don't have the ability to force the state to do the right thing. And he talked about why he's been so passionate and emotional about this issue.
Some of these sexually violent predators get put in these homes. They're not even allowed to open the blinds because of the proximity of the home to somewhere that they shouldn't be looking. And so you're saying it's better for this person, if in fact you want rehabilitation, it's better for this person to go to some home where they can't even look out the window? That's a better situation for them than being somewhere on McNeil Island? And I'm not even talking about the total confinement center. I'm talking about a secure facility on McNeil Island, yeah. Right? That wouldn't be better for them than trying to put them into Kennewick or into any of our other communities, whether it's Spokane, some other small towns. I mean, how does that make any sense at all? Yeah. And the hard part for me is everybody I talk to, when you talk to them about this, no one thinks this makes sense.
Yeah. You get, obviously, I can tell you get pretty fired up talking about it. You got emotional at the recent city council meeting talking about it. Where does that emotion come from? Like, is it personal? Is it just the stupidity of it all? What's eating away at you so much?
You know, Brandy, I've thought a lot about that. I've had that question a couple of times this last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And I've thought a lot about that. You know, I think part of it for me is that I grew up in a home. So I'm number 6 out of 9 kids. And I grew up in a home where, you know, we had a very strong family background. And I was taught to. You know, I was always taught to look out for those that have a hard time to look out for themselves. And so I think what I struggle with when we talk about this subject is that what we're doing is we're putting the rights of some people over the rights of those that are most vulnerable in our communities. And then we're not even going to talk about it. right? And so I think my initial emotion is this strong feelings of protection. I'm a father. I have 5 kids, right? I have 2 little girls. I have 3 boys. And, you know, I feel very strongly that they need to be protected. You know, I feel strong. I've gone out and I've shook hands and I've met the people that live on these streets. Some of them are they're survivors themselves. And so instead of being worried about how they feel and about what this does to them, we're so focused on getting people out of McNeil Island for a reason I still don't understand. And so the idea first that like that we're putting at jeopardy those people that are most vulnerable to us, as well as putting the rights of other people above those that have survived these heinous acts, right? Just doesn't make any sense to me. And then the idea that we're not going to talk about it, I think that's where the frustration probably boils over for me, is I don't like it when we get in these situations where things don't make any sense, but I'm just going to tell you that that's just the way it is, right?
Unreal. And it doesn't make sense to anyone. Like, why are we making these communities a proving ground for whether these sexually violent predators who sometimes spent 20 years in prison for their crimes and then still weren't deemed redeemable and were put on an island? Why are we making these communities the proving ground for whether they can get out in a less restrictive setting and not molest a child? It's insane. And like he said, and then we're not going to talk about it. With all this stuff, how many times have I had this sentiment? Whether it's like the low, you know, the affordable housing complexes, like the apartment buildings that go in places, or there's going to be a city-sanctioned homeless camp somewhere. What is the primary problem always that pops up? People are blindsided by it. You're putting, you know, an affordable apartment complex where you're going to house formerly homeless people in the middle of a neighborhood, and you didn't think, maybe we should tell people about this. And it's like so many, look, I get it that sometimes things have to happen in a society that we don't like. Like, we don't sentence these sex offenders to death. So at some point, they have constitutional rights. At some point, they're probably going to get out. They're going to have to go somewhere. But it's never going to be as bad if you as the government, you're supposed to be serving people, come out and you say, hey, you know, we've got to put these people here. You know, how can we help the community? How can we help? Can there be a grant for your police department so you can get an extra patrol? Can we go through community safety? Whatever it is. But instead, they just say, no, you'll deal with it. And it might put your families at risk, but we don't care. And that's just not how government should work. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. And if you want to catch that whole interview with Kennewick Mayor Jason McShane, you can do that by becoming an Undivided subscriber. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. We do a long form, in-depth interview every Sunday on the show that is exclusive just for subscribers. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up in a moment. Also, our segment Unbelievable. First, our friends at Firstmark Insurance have helped hundreds of Undivided viewers and listeners make sense of their insurance and get the insurance they need at the right price. We hear so many great things from you guys, Robin, Carol, Debbie, Connie, all emailing us to say that they took the Firstmark challenge. And the common thread is, Brandy, I wish I had done it sooner. Robin said, I finally joined Firstmark. I'm saving $100 a month. Yes, $100 a month. And in case you need me to do the math for you, that's $1,200 a year. And who among us could not use an extra $1,200 a year? So with Firstmark, it's always a balance. They want to make sure that they're evaluating your needs accurately. So it starts with just a conversation, but there's a balance of yes, you know, most people want to try to save money on their insurance, but they want to make sure you have great insurance that's going to cover you in the event the unthinkable happens, or what's the point? So take the Firstmark challenge today, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, woke going before things that work. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. The city of Linwood, Washington becomes just the latest progressive bastion to throw in the towel on flock cameras in the name of what exactly? Nothing. This is from the Linwood Times. The headline, Linwood terminates flock safety cameras due to trust and oversight issues. So this is just the latest in a long series of stories that we've been covering, because there was one town where they found out that the feds accessed this flock camera system. So if you're not familiar with it, it's like these cameras that are out there capturing things that are happening, usually placed in sort of higher crime areas, and then police can use the footage from those cameras to try to track suspects, to try to find missing people, stolen vehicles, and try to solve crimes. And it works. It's worked very well. Except I think it was in Renton, there was like, you can share the data on the cameras. You can open it up. It's a feature. It's a toggle. Either you keep the data from the cameras to yourself as an agency, or you say, no, we'll share it if other agencies want access to it because they think they got a criminal who fled in our jurisdiction or whatever it is. So immigration agents used it one time. And all of a sudden, all these progressive cities are like, oh, we have to do away with it entirely. Not just like, hey, why don't we just shut off the sharing feature? I mean, I'm of the belief that if you have the cameras and you believe that they're good for public safety, that we should let the feds use them as well, because I'm in support of arresting illegal aliens, many of whom are violent criminals, the ones that the feds are going after. But I realize in a blue state and blue cities, that might be asking too much. But instead of just doing having a reasonable reaction to it, like, hey, if our concern is ICE getting this data, let's find a way to make sure ICE doesn't use the data, but that our local police departments can still use it. Oh, you can't do that because that would make too much sense. So like one after another, dominoes, all these cities that have had crime issues are doing away with a valuable crime fighting tool at a time when our state has the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation. So they don't have enough police officers to patrol their communities, and they're going to get rid of the cameras that are helping supplement patrols. It says the Linwood City Council voted unanimously on Monday to terminate its contract with Flock Safety, scrapping a controversial network of automated license plate recognition cameras that had drawn months of fierce community backlash over privacy invasions and potential misuse for immigration enforcement. The council's decision was a swift reversal for a program once hailed as a crime-fighting tool, but ultimately undone by eroded public trust and lapses in data security. Monday's meeting saw overwhelming pushback. All written communications and in-person comments, about 20 total, urged cancellation with no support for the cameras voiced. Speakers warned of perpetual AI training on data, contract changes favoring Flock, and ineffective state oversight. They said this, one citizen said, this technology is fundamentally flawed. Please restore privacy to the city. Now, there are some people, politicians, and that community member who say, oh, it's a privacy issue. Of course, there's privacy issues. If you carry an iPhone around with you, that's a privacy issue. There's cameras freaking everywhere. You can't step foot anywhere without a camera capturing your every move. If you're still worried about privacy issues out in public, I don't know how to help you with that one. But when all of these cities started implementing these Flock safety systems, the privacy issue was discussed. That was a debate that's already been had about these cameras. But now they're bringing it back up because they know their ICE argument is stupid, but they know the ICE argument is stupid, or at least not strong enough on its own. So they're saying, oh, but also privacy. So they can try to further justify getting rid of them. This is just about people who love criminals and hate cops. This is shades of the defunding movement. Now they're just defunding a camera system. They wanted to defund the actual cops in 2020, and now they want to defund the system that's helping the cops fight crime because they're anti-police. That's all that this is. And not to mention, and this is a number from Flock Safety, and so I'm assuming that Flock is telling the truth about its product, but we have anecdotally, as the Linwood Times pointed out, these cities that installed it, I mean, in Puyallup, they had this story about, oh my gosh, all these crimes we've solved with the Flock Safety cameras. So Flock claims that about 10% of reported crime in the U.S. is solved using their technology across the nation. And I know that an assault on me, they identified a suspect using the Flock Safety system. So I know that it works, and I know that it's utilized by these police departments, which has been a tremendous tool post-police defunding, so they can basically have more eyes on the streets and more eyes on the public to keep them safe when they don't have enough police officers. So that's going on. And then, of course, in the Senate, there's this effort to unwind or to, at the state level, to basically try to make it more difficult for cities to implement these Flock camera systems moving forward. Senate Bill 6002, it was passed by the Senate, it's in committee. And so it's over on the House side right now. And it says that it is an act relating to driver privacy protections and automated license plate reader systems. So they're now claiming, oh, it's about privacy. So let's take this valuable crime fighting tool and let's make it difficult to use and to implement. It's just so stupid. And it's all because one city found out that maybe, I don't even think it was officially confirmed, maybe federal agents used it. and there's a simple way to prevent them from using it, and they refuse to do so. Virtue signaling at its worst. Unbelievable. All right, we'll get to national news coming up next. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. They have an awesome network of other housing providers. They have events across the state all the time that you can be part of, learn about the latest policies and laws and what they're doing to fight back against the bad ones. And then they're down in Olympia this time of year advocating on your behalf as well. So part of the membership dues go to that work. But then also, they can help you on a one-on-one basis. They can help you make sure that you're navigating and keeping up to date with all the latest local, county, state laws, you know, what's going on with rent control, what changes you can expect to see as a landlord in the future. So it's just really a beneficial organization to be a part of. Wonderful advertisers on our show. The Rental Housing Association of Washington, rhawa.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right. Nicole, do you have a poll yet? Yeah. Can we do that? Daily subscriber, State of the Union tonight. Nicole and I are going to, our friend Ari Hoffman at KVI is having steak. This is the best idea, and I kind of want to steal it from him. They do Steak of the Union, where they have like a listener event at, is it at Daniel's Broiler? We better get that right. Yeah. You better confirm that so we don't tease a rival steak place. Pretty sure it's at Daniel's Broiler. And they do Steak of the Union, and listeners come in, they eat steak, drink drinks, and watch the State of the Union. So that's what we're doing after this.
Daniel's Broiler.
Okay, good. I like Daniel's, so that works. So we get to go, and he gave us free tickets. So we free steak. And I said, can I order a 110-ounce tomahawk, or is it sort of limited? But I asked you guys, what topic do you hope President Trump focuses on most during tonight's State of the Union address? For subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, the economy, immigration, foreign affairs, or personal beefs? I wonder how many people chose personal beefs. We're going to find out. Nicole, what do you say?
Gosh, focus. Because I hope he hits them all, you know?
Come on, that's not the question.
I'm going to go with economy. Tell us how the economy is going to improve, because that's where people are seeing it, feeling it the most right now.
I love you guys.
Well, maybe not seeing it, I guess.
1% said personal beefs, which I like. I mean, you're petty for that. That's a fun one. I love that. That's fun. UF88, I want every illegal immigrant deported and all of Biden's refugees deported. This is my priority, and it's my only issue. So, yeah, and honestly, that does impact the economy. I would say economy, because I do think Trump has gotten a little into too many sort of other areas during a midterm where we know historically the economy is really what matters to people. So most of you, 76%, saying the economy. Sherry says, I really would like, though, an explanation for what appears to be an escalation of the United States in foreign affairs. Why are we continuing to focus and contribute to foreign wars and issues when our own backyard remains a near disaster? Now, what I would say to that is, you know, I think there's a different, because you had mentioned Venezuela, Iran, Israel, Ukraine. There's a lot of difference in there. Like, there's a difference in how Venezuela and what happens there affects our interests in the United States, especially since it's in the same hemisphere. So probably different than the extent to which the war in Ukraine impacts the United States. So I think there's a difference in what are the United States' interest in getting involved. And I'm no expert on foreign affairs, but I think there's some differences there. But also when you say why are we continuing to focus and contribute to foreign wars and issues when our own backyard remains a near disaster? I actually think Trump has done a pretty good job at doing both. I mean, he fixed the border crisis in what, 3 months? And the crime rates have dropped exponentially. The overdose rates have dropped exponentially. These are issues that were getting worse and worse and worse over a period of 10 years, really in earnest during the Biden administration. And so I think Trump has done a really good job at focusing on issues at home and doing some strategic, you know, foreign meddling, so to speak. Not that I've agreed with all of that. Crunchy Wallet says focusing on personal beefs would make for great entertainment. We'll be eating beef while he maybe carries out his personal beefs. Paul, eating beef at the steakhouse. Okay. Let's see. Paul, I pray he sticks with the teleprompter and avoids his impulsivity for shoot from the hip quips that wander into personal attacks. You know something interesting? I forgot to put this in the show sheet, Nicole, but I should pull it up. One of his guests at the State of the Union tonight is going to be a young girl who was basically kidnapped by the government from her family. And so it's not, I don't believe it's someone from our state. It says this is from
Sorry, let me just read this quick. Daily Caller White House correspondent Reagan Reese. Scoop, President Trump's guest for his State of the Union address will include Sage Blair, a young woman who was separated from her parents at age 14 after school officials attempted to secretly transition her to a male. Blair, who is now reunited with her parents and attending Liberty University, will be joined by her mom. The president will use the story to call on states to ban sex transitioning operations for minors. And we have a state, we have a lawsuit that stems from a law like that in Washington state that we've covered and had scoops on this show that might be about to go before the United States Supreme Court. So very interesting that President Trump is choosing to have one of these kids that was like government-sanctioned kidnapping over radical gender ideology. A couple more comments quick before I talk about Trump in the Epstein files, I guess. John, I'd love to hear him talk about the economy, immigration, and his accomplishments. Yeah, it's midterms. He's going to be heavy on accomplishments for sure. Casey, I'm most interested in what you have to say at the Steak of the Union, Brandy. I don't think I'm speaking at the Steak of the Union.
Oh, I think you aren't I just eating steak at the end? Maybe
after I've been drinking.
I think so.
Well, Casey and Seabeck. We'll see. You should be interested then in what I'm about to say. I'll just lay it on out. All right. So good stuff per the usual. NPR put out this report on Trump and the Epstein files. The headline, Justice Department withheld and removed some Epstein files related to Trump. And without getting into it, it's a very, very long report. I mean, go read it, certainly. It basically says that when the Trump administration says they've released all the Epstein files, they're not telling the truth, and they've strategically hid some that implicated President Donald Trump, possibly in a sex assault on a minor. Okay. Here's the thing. NPR has 100% lost any credibility to get the benefit of the doubt on anything. And I am not going to believe, based on sources, based on documents you haven't seen, that there's credible evidence that President Donald Trump sexually assaulted or tried to sexually assault a minor. I mean, this is one of the same news entities that pushed the Russia hoax. And so start there. Totally lost trust in my willingness to just believe that there's there. But here's the other thing I'll say about the Epstein files. You really think, and I'm always open to changing my mind, you give me incontrovertible evidence and I'll change my mind. That doesn't bother me, even if it's about Donald Trump. 100%. But you want me to believe that all the ways you've tried to get this man, impeachment after impeachment, sending him to prison, felony convictions, trial, financial, raiding Mar-a-Lago, all the accusations and all the ways you've tried to get this man over 10 years, and Biden, the Biden White House and the Biden DOJ for 4 years had their hands on documents with credible accusations that President Trump tried to sexually assault a minor tied to the Epstein scandal, and you didn't use that? No. There's absolutely 0% chance of that. If they had anything, I mean, we've seen it, big and small, doesn't matter. They'll try to get Trump in any way possible. There's no way the Biden White House had their hands on documents that were credible in terms of implicating President Trump in the Epstein saga. And they didn't release them. So give me a break. I'm just over it. All right. I had to play this video quick. Did you see this? The big snowstorm in New York City and NYPD officers being pelted. It sounds, I mean, attacked with snowballs. Look at this. Oh, my God. It wasn't playful.
No, I feel so bad for them.
It was disgusting.
I don't know how they kept their cool. No pun intended.
No. And they were throwing it out. Oh, look at that. I mean, masked. Huge snowballs, some of them chunks of ice, nonstop. Oh my God, that makes me so mad. I want to punch every single one of those people in the face. And they can't find a way out. They don't know where to go. That horrible is so humans. Disgusting. Horrible human beings. You know who else a horrible human being? The mayor of New York City. The communist says, I've seen the videos. Oh my God. I've seen the videos of kids throwing snowballs at NYPD officers in Washington Square Park. Clearly not, because if you saw the videos, you would see they weren't kids. And these were chunks of ice. You can see in this image, that's ice. How dare you say they're kids? And he says, officers, like all city workers, have been out in a historic blizzard, keeping New Yorkers safe and cars moving. Treat them with respect. If anyone's catching a snowball, it's me. Like making a joke. They weren't kids.
You can see it in the video. These are masked adults. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. And the NYPD has some images and still videos where they're looking at people who assaulted. They're looking for people who assaulted these officers.
I literally don't see any children.
No. Like some maybe low 20s, but I see no children. Do you think we're stupid? The Police Benevolent Association blasted Mamdani's response, calling it a failure of leadership, saying this wasn't a snowball fight. This was an assault by adults throwing chunks of ice and rocks that landed two police officers in the hospital with head and face injuries. So disgusting. I mean, this reminds me of the assault at the school that we'll have to do a follow-up on tomorrow. Gosh, that story went crazy all over the place. With those 13-year-olds beating that girl because allegedly they thought she supported Trump. Like, society is sick and twisted, but the left has become so violent. So violent. And in this case, for what? Officers out helping people in the snow? And you're throwing ice chunks at their head? Society is going downhill fast. I mean, I am for giant meteor 2028. Like, honestly, just bring it on. Giant meteor 2028. I think we're all ready for that. You're not? I don't care at this point. Bring it on. If that's the society that we're living in, it's only going to get worse.
It's
giant
scary.
Meteor 2027. I don't even care. All right. I'm not suicidal, by the way. I just, joking about the end of civilization. All right. Our friend Wes Jones is the guy you want to call if you are thinking about selling your home. And it's never too early to check in. If you're thinking, I always hear this from people in the comments, like, that's it. This is the final straw, Brandy. I'm leaving. And I don't know how much of that is just, you saying it for clicks, or if you really mean it. And if you're thinking about it, we'd hate to lose you, but you can reach out to our friend Wes Jones and get the process started. So one of the first things he does is he'll give you kind of a lay of the land for what the market is doing. How long can you expect it to take to sell your home? What are the conditions like down to your block in your neighborhood? And then he'll come up with a plan. One of the things he does is he pre-inspects his listings, and it takes so much stress out of the process because you find out on the front end what might be wrong, what might need to be fixed, and then you can avoid these renegotiations, repair requests, contract fallout, all the stressful stuff that you don't want to go through at the end of a home selling process. So call our friend Wes Jones. First, go to sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator right there on the website to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then I always say, talk to a few real estate agents, ask them what they can do for you. I think after you do that, you'll find that Wes Jones and his team have a lot to offer. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, comments from the live stream. I told Miranda, called her this morning and said, we're not having a show till 3, which is 6 p.m. her time. I was like, you got the whole day. Do whatever you want. Son Miller with a $50 super chat. Oh, gas money for trips to Olympia. I appreciate that. Thank you, sir. Scott says... Cheap. Yeah, it ain't cheap. Speaking of things that are expensive under Democrat rule, Scott, Democrats always accuse others of doing what they themselves do. And you know a good example of that?
What?
When they were trying, perfect example of this, they were trying to pass the initiative killer bills. Mm-hmm. And they said, we need to ban people like Let's Go Washington from using paid signature gatherers where they pay them per signature because it's an incentive just to write in fraudulent signatures. So they said it was about fraud protections. Remember the one case of fraud that could be found? It was SEIU. Right. So SEIU was testifying saying, we need to stop fraud. SEIU, only example of someone committing fraud. I think it was with an income tax proposal initiative. And they were out there writing in fake, they were real names, fraudulent signatures.
Yep.
So it's like, accuse the other side of doing what you yourself do.
I mean, her laughing.
Yes.
Anger laughing at that. Oh, it's not a crime.
Yeah.
if she knew that there were Republicans behind it, she would absolutely be for it being prosecuted
100%.
Like to the fullest extent of the law.
Right. Well, but it can't be both. It can't be both ways where you say, at the hearing, you're like, this is, really crushed the democratic process. This is a serious thing and all this. And it's like, oh, no, but let's not look into it anymore. Right. Let's just, we'll just, ha, ha, ha.
It makes so much sense now because we saw 100%. These lists of people from the SEIU logging in at a specific time. And they're like,
yeah,
but if you were going to pull this off, like, that's what you do. You tell everybody, sign in, and write at whatever time it was, put your name in SEIU, but put it for con, because it doesn't really matter anyway, and we're going to try to blame them for botting. Right.
We'll find, if there's evidence to be found, we will find it.
Now it's genius. We should do it to the other side.
It's not even genius. It's so obvious when you see the organized press conference where they're all there. They all happen to be he, him, she, shers, and they all have the same red background. And it's like, okay, great, good for you. I mean, kudos to you, but I'm not falling for it. It's so obvious. It's so obvious.
And you just love the media just eat it.
Yes, on the Seattle Times, perpetrating the bot nonsense, Casey says, every episode of Undivided is powerful, but this one should get every common sense person fired up for change. Peterson and his Democrat cronies don't give an F about anything but their narrative. It's absolutely disgusting.
And exhausting.
I know. Country guys on Jamie Peterson, God knows he would know how to lie with statistics. Yeah, he said, because he was telling me. I mean, you can't deny the question I asked him.
Mm-hmm.
This is how the budget has increased. Billions in new taxes, twice as much per pupil. And you're sitting here telling me we have no money for education. Doesn't make sense, because we found enough money to spend twice as much per pupil in the state of Washington.
I was just talking to someone the other day who sends our kids to school every day.
Yeah.
And they have plenty of food, plenty of money. But every day their daughter goes to school and goes and gets crap from the cafeteria because it's free to everyone.
Yeah.
No, you know, income requirement at all.
Right.
And so they try to feed her good food at home, but she goes to school and gets cinnamon rolls every morning.
Yep.
And why are we paying for that for kids that do not eat it?
Yeah.
And their families can afford it just fine. But waste. That's what we're doing. That's where we're spending this money.
Dan B, they say they're all about democracy, but don't listen to the voters who overwhelmingly don't want a state income tax, and don't hide it. Just say, yeah, we're not listening to you anyway. Right. Have all the bot sign-ins you want. Jeffrey, duplicate sign-ins? Are they suggesting voter fraud? Because pot kettle, is it because this is what they would do? It's funny, Northwest Progressive Institute said, oh, you know, how about Republicans, we put this to rest and think about this like a Republican would. We'll just require an ID, every voter ID, every time that you want to sign in pro or con. And they're like saying it.
Okay.
Thinking, I go, okay.
Yeah.
Fine. And they said, you can only be a citizen to sign in. You have to show your ID, and kind of mocking us. And I'm like, no, dude, that's a good idea. Great. I don't want non-citizens weighing in and testifying on our on our laws. And I frankly don't want people who aren't voters or of voting age. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's have IDs. Let's require people to scan an ID. And don't store it in the system, but scan an ID to sign in pro and con. And he sort of backed away from it because, of course, they don't want that. Defender of Poodles says the same people screaming about bots also call you an election denier if you question mail-in voting. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Sean plays guitar. Interesting screen name. Very, you know,
good one.
I'm Sean. I play the guitar. Defender, so a bunch of these people, yeah, signed in and then said they didn't to drum up questions about the legitimacy of it. Yes, exactly.
100%.
Only thing that makes sense. OXMRM says the Democrats in this state actually hate us. They believe we're stupid. Yeah, I do believe they think we're dumb.
They know we're smart, but they know their people are stupid. Sorry.
Your face,
falling for it.
For the record, this show is called Undivided, and we welcome everyone from across the political spectrum to join us for respectful debate and dialogue about politics. Moving on.
That's all that's falling for it.
On the Kennewick mayor and the fight to keep sexually violent predators out of his town, John Thomas, the state senator, reminds me of Neville from iCarly. He's just as smarmy. Also, sex offenders can't be rehabilitated. Who's the state senator that reminds you of Neville from iCarly? Jamie Peterson? I don't know who Neville from iCarly is.
I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah, I don't even know what iCarly is. De Pluribus Unum.
Oh, yeah, no, it is from, yeah, it would be Peterson. Okay.
They need yard signs to let parents know that sex offenders live there. Yeah, I think they'll be all over that. Let's see a couple more here. Linda, years ago, when we opened a homeless winter shelter in North Bend, we went door to door with so many blocks, giving people notice of hearings. There were where everyone could ask their questions and share their concerns. To just blindly force anything like this on a community is just wrong. I know. Who do you work for? Who do you work for? Every day I get closer and closer to running for governor of this fine state of ours. Because, you know, it's just like so easy to not suck this bad at government.
It's true.
Linwood voting to ban flock cameras. John Thomas, I agree with progressives, but I don't want the mass surveillance state. Flock cameras, Flock owns the cameras and data. It will be used to track and limit travel eventually.
And yeah, I understand the surveillance concerns. But let's not pretend that these concerns, which they knew were concerns to begin with, mm-hmm. are now the reason that they're dismantling them. They're dismantling them now because they hate the cops.
And also, like, if it comes to that, then dismantle them.
Yeah.
And I just don't buy it. Anybody that's out there complaining about these flock cameras but still carrying a cell phone, no. Because you're just, like, things you like and you use, you don't care if they surveil and track you and whatever. But, oh, like, I don't want immigrants to be got by ICE, so the government, so now I don't like this one, and it's because of surveillance, not because of immigrants.
The government knows how many times I've been to Taco Time in the last month, okay? They know the shade of lipstick that I buy. And I'm just, no, no, I don't eat at Taco Time. Because I'm in my skinny girl era. Well, actually, Taco Time has some
Taco Time.
Taco Time, refreshing, fresh.
Yeah,
it's Tex-Mex.
I don't consider it fast food.
Okay, it's fine. They have a Fit Hit Bowl that I like. It's like a fitness bowl, but it's actually really good.
I buy the bottles.
Can we get Taco Time? Are they woke or would they sponsor our show? But let's be honest,
business owners. So I'm going to go. They'd sponsor
the Mexi things. They're tater tots.
Mexi tot.
They don't even put Mexi spices fries, on what
they
it.
They used to call
it's
it, but they don't
It's literally
anymore.
Just tater tots.
It is.
But anyway, enough about that. They don't sponsor our show. They had got no money for all of that free advertising. Matthew Cook, birds of a feather eliminate flock together. That's funny. Moon Goddess with a super chat. Flock cameras are the reason Jeffrey Ziz is in jail for unaliving Marsha Norman. Without the flock cameras, he would have gotten away with it. That's interesting. A lot of serious crimes have been solved thanks to those cameras.
I mean, if Tucson, Arizona had more flock cameras, maybe Nancy would have been found by now. Good Lord.
Amen. Oh my gosh. We haven't even really ever discussed the Nancy thing on our show. What a failure. So I mean, she just disappears in 2026 in America. There's no cameras showing where this woman went. Wild. But
there were flock cameras. Yeah. We know who was in and out.
All right. Thank you, Nicole. We'll get to our closing sanity check.
I need Keith Morrison or
something. Keith Morrison on it. Someone. Dateline. Secrets uncovered. All right. Before we get to our closing sanity check, our friends at Valentine Roofing, for just a few more days, they've extended their expanded customer referral program through the end of February. Why? Because it's Valentine Roofing. February, Valentine. Yes. Spread the love. I love it. So if you're a Valentine customer and if you loved your new roof or siding, now is the best time to share that level of care with your friends and family. So through the end of the month, when you refer friends or family for a new roof or siding, you'll earn your choice of a free maintenance service or a $250 gift card. And as you know, you can be confident when referring your loved ones because every Valentine Roofing customer receives the Valentine experience. And I would know because I am a Valentine Roofing customer. You get seamless communication. I can confirm that. Meticulous cleanup. I can confirm that. And extra mile service, even in winter weather. Technically, I can't confirm that because I haven't got service in winter weather yet. It hasn't snowed at my house yet this year, which I'm waiting for that to happen. Anyway, refer your friends and family to Valentine, 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. Schedule your free estimate today if you need new roof, new siding, gutters cleaned. They offer a lot of services, exterior cleaning, etc. All right, with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I was just reading your notes on this one, and I'm like, Jesus, these people. This Congresswoman Maxine Dexter from Portland area in Oregon, She reminds me of someone from a sitcom. Oh, I know what it is. Have you ever seen Big Bang Theory?
Yes.
And there's a while there where the guy's dating this nerdy scientist chick. Okay, well, play the clip. Are. So anyway, Maxine, I'll find it. Maxine Dexter, you know, this whole push to make America healthy again. And part of it's like eating whole food. And they did this whole like got milk campaign. Well, apparently that's just white supremacy.
Please ask for the science-based regimens, not whatever RFK Jr. is getting kickbacks on or, you know, whatever whole milk, white supremacy dog whistling that's happening right now.
Yeah, okay. It's white supremacy to drink milk. I mean, who would have thought? You know, I don't drink milk. I don't really like milk, so I'm not a white supremacist, which I also knew. I don't know this lady's name, but she looks like one of the actresses from The Big Bang Theory. And it wasn't even a main actress. It was like a side chick who dated someone, and I will figure it out. And everybody be like, yes, she does. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that has been our closing sanity check. Enjoy the State of the Union tonight. I'm sure that we will give you some highlights. Thank you for being flexible with us today so I could go down to Olympia, which is a good thing to do occasionally. What else? We'll be back to our regular show time tomorrow at noon. Nicole's just over there Googling. Denise! It is. It's Denise from Big Bang Theory. Denise. Okay, you guys, go Google that.
You're right.
And tell, oh my gosh, that looks like Maxine Dexter. I knew someone. Anyway, subscribe to support our show. Obviously, we have very intelligent conversations. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPOD.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. We'll see you back at our regular time tomorrow at noon.